Was Roman Josi's day in Bern, Switzerland, Sean, not awesome? It was awesome for me. Preds win 4-3. He gets two goals and an assist. First star. This is a guy who grew up a stone's throw, basically. Well, 3 kilometers, not a stone's throw, but close enough to Post Finance Arena. He grew up playing there. He gets to go back, live out a dream with his NHL club. His paternal grandmother gets to see him play for his NHL team for the first time ever in person. What a storyline. What a storybook day for Roman Josi, which was on Monday, and we're recording this Tuesday morning.
It was amazing, right? It was cool to see it. And, you know, our colleague Nick Constanica, who's out there and will be covering the Preds throughout their European adventure, their European vacation, you know, did a great job in capturing it. He even talked to the president. Not bad company to keep. So, it was amazing. And we talked about this last week. That's what these events are for. You know, they're to expose the game to other people, and they're to allow some of the players that participate in it to have memories that'll last a lifetime. When Roman Josi's career highlights are played, and it'll be a long, long video reel, this will be one of the touchstone moments.
Yeah, and he touched on that too in Nick's story, which was terrific, and it's on NHL.com right now, and you can go read it. He touched on it, how this guy, and Nick captured this, he's played in the Stanley Cup Final. He's won the Norris Trophy. He's the all-time leading scorer, I think, of Swiss-born players in the National Hockey League. He's one of the best defensemen, without question, you know, in the league right now. And this is a career highlight for him, he said. Like, going to play, you know, a game in Europe, it wouldn't normally be, right? I mean, it's not a career highlight for Ryan Johansson. It's not a career highlight for Matt Duchene or these guys. I mean, it's fun. It's great. You know, going to play a European team that, you know, as a tune-up, your final tune-up before you start the regular season, it wouldn't normally be that. But for Roman Josi, this was basically a dream come true to go get an opportunity to play his former team with his NHL club. And we played the interview that we did with Roman Josi in the episode last week that you can still go listen to. And it was the first time he's ever played against his former team. Remember, he grew up playing in the Bern system, played for SC Bern, and went and has only played for the Nashville Predators in the National Hockey League. So he's never played against a former team. This was his first time, and it was a great, great storyline. A good game, too, by the way. I mean, that was the other thing. Like, those guys, Bern can play. Like, they came to play, Sean.
Yeah, no, they can. They were leading in that game, right? There's a little bit of panic. European teams have won. You've seen it. I saw when another Swiss team, HC Davos, beat the Chicago Blackhawks in the old Victoria Cup, and almost died on my way home. There was so much celebration. Somebody almost ran me over after I finished writing my story. It was such a big deal, and it was a big deal for Bern. This wasn't an exhibition for them. You know, this was a measuring stick, and they came and they played. Now, what I really want to know, and we'll never know until we see Roman Josi again, is if in the locker room afterwards he did a little beatboxing.
I hope so, because, you know, we expect that now for Roman Josi all the time. That should be his celebration. Honestly, give the guy a mic after he scores a goal and let it be his goal celebration, right? I mean, that was great. And again, you can listen to that. You can hear Roman Josi beatbox on this podcast if you go listen to last week's episode with their interview with Roman Josi. But Sean, let's flip it to you. You're coming to us from a different location. You're in St. John's, and you will be going to Gander, Newfoundland. You're at Kraft Hockeyville 2020. Yes, it's 2022, but because of COVID, it got backlogged a little bit. The game is going to be in Gander on Thursday night. It's Ottawa and Montreal. Twillingate, I believe, was the winner of Kraft Hockeyville. But you love it up there, don't you? Like, this is you love being in that Newfoundland. You went on vacation to Newfoundland and you're back. I've never been to Newfoundland. I've never been to St. John's, never been up there.
We may do this podcast remotely for the rest of the season. I may just stay up here, even though the winter could be miserable. This is one of the greatest places in the world. It's completely unspoiled. The people are beyond nice, if you can understand them. And I've been here enough to somewhat understand the accent. I got a few yes boys yesterday when I asked for stuff. But it's unbelievable. It's a 4-hour drive from here after we get done with this to Gander. and it literally will take your breath away. You may see moose on the way. You'll see salmon rivers, unspoiled landscape the whole way. There's barely a town you're going to go through on the Trans-Canada Highway. And then Twillingate is another hour and a half from Gander. And that is the town that won. It's a little, what they call an outport, you know, hard on the ocean. There's a lighthouse there that draws people there. Another beautiful ride. And the rink there is a little tiny community rink. It's supposedly the second coldest rink in Newfoundland. I was talking to Darren Langdon, who was a Newfoundland product who played for the Rangers 30 years ago now. I covered him at the start of my career. And I asked him, and he said, there's a lot of cold rinks in Newfoundland, and he's played in all of them. He played in the senior league here, which was a pretty big deal when he got done with hockey, and then coach Cornerbrook. But it's so cold in that rink that the water bottles freeze during the first period. Halfway through the first period, they have to bring out new water bottles and thaw the old ones. So it's no fun being a goalie in that rink. And when they do the renovations, hopefully they warm it up a little bit. The coldest rink, by the way, for those that are wondering, supposedly is in Badger, Newfoundland.
It's another place I've never heard of, but you know what, the way you listen,
I've never been there either. It's on the bucket list now.
But listening to you talk about it, I can totally get it. You know, unspoiled, I think, is a good way of putting it. It seems like it would be beautiful, like just to experience something like that up there, completely different, you know, different part of the world, really. So different from what we know, living, you know, living in North Jersey, right? I mean, it's so different, but, unspoiled too. I mean, look, Ottawa's up there and they got some bad news, right? So let's touch on a little bit of news going on in the NHL. Cam Talbot out 5 to 7 weeks. Great off season for the Ottawa Senators. They won the offseason. We kept talking about that, right? And here we go. This is going to be a team that's going to challenge for a playoff spot. And they very well might challenge for a playoff spot. But a little bit of reality hits, right? It's not always rosy. It's not always great. Now Cam Talbot's out 5 to 7 weeks. So I think that's going to be they're already facing their first bit of adversity. And this is still a young team. Let's see how they handle it.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of adversity, right? That's your number one. That's one of the big acquisitions you got along with Alex DeBrincat, the forward. And look, 5 to 7 weeks is a long time, and he's a goalie. Like, you don't just be like, oh, I was out 5 weeks, I'm back, I'm ready. Like, it's going to take him some while. It's going to take him a while to ramp up. So you're looking at a minimum probably of 2 months, right? And you need to survive that as a young team. So it's going to be a challenge. Look, and I think that's why Brad Treliving, the Calgary GM, you know, when they kept saying he won the offseason recovering from the Johnny Gaudreau free agent leaving to Columbus, was like, nobody wants to win the offseason.
Right.
You want to win during the season. And that's what Pierre Dorion and all of them want in Ottawa. It's going to be a little more difficult now.
Well, you know what it is, too? It's another opportunity for Anton Forsberg, who's going to now assume the role as their number one. And it seems to me like this guy has always been the one that's pushed aside. And when Talbot came in, he was pushed aside again. But Forsberg's 29 years old, and this guy put up a 917 save percentage in 46 games last season. It 282, I think it was his goals against average. Ottawa wasn't a great defensive team. Ottawa still is not a great defensive team. And Anton Forsberg had a 917 save percentage. He's a good goaltender. This injury, it hurts their goaltending depth, no question about it. But they have to feel still pretty good that they at least have Anton Forsberg to assume a big part of this over the first 2 months of the season with Cam Talbot on the shelf with the upper body injury. And that's why I think Ottawa, you know, is still going to be okay. But it's, again, it's that backup role. It's the back-to-back games. It's Forsberg in that role, but can he handle it for the full time for 2 months? That's going to be interesting, but I honestly, like, Cam Talbot was almost a luxury for them when you have a goaltender who had a 917 save percentage in 46 games. That's not a joke. And Forsberg's been pretty good for a while now.
Of course. But you're right. It is the workload. You know, we talked about that with Logan Thompson in Vegas, who's put up some good numbers, and now he has to assume a heavy workload. It's physical. It's mental. It's emotional. All those things you need to learn to deal with. A lot of backups have said it's the hardest transition to make is to go into that full-time role. Like you need to figure out how to practice. You know, you don't get the same reps in practice that you do as a backup, you know, and all the things that go on with that. So I have no doubt that Anton Forsberg can be a good goalie in this league. The question is, can he handle the workload that he's going to be asked to handle now and do it on a team that is no longer an afterthought? That the people in Ottawa are excited about. Like there's a genuine optimism, and with optimism comes expectations, and with expectations comes pressure. The Ottawa Senators have not played under pressure other than their own for the past couple of years. Now they're going to play under pressure. They're going to be critiqued more sternly than they have in the past. And that's going to be a difficult thing for all of them to handle, especially Anton Forsberg.
They don't have a back-to-back until early December. So that does help them. That will allow Forsberg to play a lot more probably within those first 2 months of the season while Talbot's out. And, you know, they obviously have to hope that Talbot's out on the shorter end of the 5 to 7 weeks than the longer end. Before we move on to another team that's all banged up in the Atlantic Division, I want to point out soon, a couple minutes from now, you'll hear an interview with Austin Matthews that we did also in the Atlantic Division. The Toronto Maple Leafs 60-goal scorer. Terrific stuff from him, Sean. Talks about his tennis game, right? I mean, that was a big part of the conversation that we had with him. You asked him one of the best questions that there is it fun not being good at something?
It is fun being not good at something because I'm not good at anything. So if it's not fun, I'd be screwed.
So you're living a fun life then. There you go.
The best.
You're living the best life. And obviously Austin talks about 60 goals. And later on in the episode, we're going to have an interview with Zach Werenski as well from the Columbus Blue Jackets. And definitely listen to how he found out about Johnny Gaudreau signing with the Blue Jackets. But before we get to the interview with Austin, I wanted to get to the Boston Bruins, Sean, because again, a little bit of news here, Taylor Hall, upper body injury week to week, pretty significant, according to Coach Jim Montgomery. He's more significant than they initially thought it was going to be. So he's out to start the season. We're really week to week to me is pretty vague. I don't know how long that's going to be for him. Brad Marchand's out to start the season. Charlie McAvoy's out to start the season. And Matt Grizzlick is out to start the season. They're in deep here at the start of the season here for the Boston Bruins. And you look around, you say, look, you know, Ottawa's a team that's coming. We just talked about their injury to Cam Talbot, but they're coming. Buffalo is dying to get off to a good start. Detroit's a better team. Boston's going to have to survive this without four key parts of their team for a while here to start the season. And you get off to a bad start, Sean, it's hard to recover. So I think the Bruins are a team. Now I still have them as a playoff team, even with this Taylor Hall injury. But they're teetering. They're one of those teams like, you know, the aging core. And now with all these injuries, you have to start to wonder if they're going to be able to survive this.
Look, Patrice Bergeron is super, but he's not Superman.
Right.
He cannot go this alone. Right. And I know there's a lot of excitement in Boston about their young players. Jack Stutnik is going to, you know, maybe get a chance. Fabian Lysell. And you know, people are like, oh, there's finally some good young players being injected into the lineup. But I don't know that that helps them survive this. I actually don't have them as a playoff team. I did in the first Super 16 we did. I think I had them at 16 and just squeezing in. Their forward depth is scary at this point. Scary bad. Halloween scary, not scary good. And I knocked them out. I put the Islanders as the 16. They have better goaltending. I don't know that they're going to be able to score, but I don't know that Boston's going to be able to score much either. So they are in deep, tough task for Jim Montgomery, the new coach. And, you know, again, expectations are incredibly high there internally. You know, Patrice Bergeron expects them to be a playoff team. And they well could, but it will be, A, if they are, Jim Montgomery wins coach of the year, hands down. I don't care what else happens. And B, things are going to have to go really well.
See, I still have them as a playoff team because I can't say that I fully trust Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, right? I mean, that's kind of the reason why. The consistency of those teams, or I should say the inconsistency that I expect from those teams, is the reason why I still think the Bruins sneak in. And it, even if they get off to a mediocre start, which I now expect them to get off to, a bad start is different, right? I mean, if they're in dead last after a month and a half, if we're talking about Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, and looking at the Boston Bruins and they're several points out and they got to climb a couple of teams, then we're in a different situation here. But I don't think it's going to be that way. Their goaltending is solid. Even without McAvoy and Grzelcyk, if they play the style of play I think they're going to be able to play, they'll be able to keep the puck out of the net, score enough with Pasternak can beat you with from distance. He can beat you in close. He's that type of goal scorer. Bergeron still is good. Krejci's there. I think you'll get more out of Pavel Zacha, especially if he's playing with a Krejci or a Bergeron than you did when he was playing with the New Jersey Devils. So I still think that they're in, but it's going to be tight. No question about it. I can't trust the Senators, the Sabres, and the Red Wings yet until you see it. I just can't. Whereas I have an institutional knowledge of what I know of the Boston Bruins, and that's why I have a little bit of faith, even with all these injuries, that they'll be able to withstand it.
Yeah, the division helps them, and I guess when you look at it, like, they could get in the playoffs without being one of the best 16 teams with the way it's set up.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they still are a playoff team. I have trouble believing it. Like, I I've always been high on Boston throughout this run of excellence that they've had. Their culture to me is one of the best in the league. Brad Marchand is an elite, elite player. Like, it's not just somebody you say, oh, well, he's out of the lineup. Like, he scores goals at a rate that the greatest players in this league score right now. Like, better than most of the players in the league. I think he's second or third over the last 10 years in goals scored. So they have some problems, right? And it's mostly depth. And one of the teams that they're competing against has some problems with depth, so much so that they're talking about putting one of their best players out of his natural position and turning a forward into a defenseman.
Yeah, I don't buy that from Toronto and Mitch. You know, that where you're talking about Mitchell Marner, who's one of the best forwards in the league. Yes, we may see him on the back end on occasion, a shift here, a shift there to change things up. I think it's, you know, kind of an innovative approach that Sheldon Keefe is looking at. And that became a storyline, you know, out of Toronto. But also you have to remember, and we're all as guilty as this as ever. And I love it. I'm not going to complain about it at all. But some of that I think is a little bit media driven too. You know, you see something in practice that they might be just trying out one time and you're like, oh, let's ask the coach about that. And we're going to make that a story. It becomes a story of the day. Right. And that's kind of what I got out of that Marner thing with him playing on some defense. And Sheldon Keefe even downplayed it, like, hey, well, it's something we're looking at, but, you know, we'll see. Marner's not a defenseman, but you may see him on the back end occasionally, especially if they need some offense, they push for it and whatnot. He's a responsible player, so I don't see a problem with it. And if it works, it's a nice innovative approach. It's going to be interesting to see, but I'm not buying I'm not going too deep into that one.
Well, he didn't dismiss it.
Like, if you don't
want this to be a storyline, you say, no, he's one of our best forwards. He's not going to do that. Look, I think part of it was they're in deep right now, right? As you like to say, there are a lot of injuries on defense. Expectations are high. I think Sheldon was trying to throw something out there, a little bit of chum, and hoping that the reporters took it and kind of got away from, you know, hey, how's the season going to start? You know, maybe you guys aren't as good as we think you are. Like, that's good coaching right there. But when you think about it, right, there's been players that have done it. Brent Burns did it early in his career. He was a forward before he became a defenseman. Dustin Byfuglien did it. They're different players, right? They're as forwards, they're guys who go to the net and create havoc. Zdeno Chara did it. Like, that's all the opposite way. He was a net front presence and he was a immovable object in front of the net. This is asking to go the other way. But what I think is creative about it is you think about, right, the most desperate move in hockey is to pull your goalie. You're losing a game, you pull your goalie. This is a more conservative approach, right? You play five forwards on the power play because you have a numerical advantage. If one of your forwards is really good, why don't you play him as a defenseman, right? If he's really good defensively and he can play a two-on-one coming back the other way, load your lineup, right? The Red Wings did it with Fedorov.
Mm-hmm.
They played him on defense. You know, load your lineup. It's almost like trying to generate a power play or a numerical advantage without leaving your net unguarded, right? So you're down one goal. It doesn't even have to be late in the game, 2 or 3 minutes left, 12 minutes left. You start rolling Marner, one shifted on as a forward, one shift as a defenseman, and you see what happens. Like, I think you have that luxury if you trust the player intrinsically to be defensively responsible. You can't do it with Connor McDavid. Like, you can't put Connor McDavid on the point and say, oh, we're going to chase the game. Like, he's not a player who, when transition happens the other way, is going to be like, I know how to deal with this. Mm-hmm. Like, he's better in his own end, but he's not playing a two-on-one right. Like, that's just not in his toolbox. I think it could be in Mitch Marner's. And I think it's a way, as coaches are always trying to innovate and figure out how to statistically stack things in their way. You know, it's almost like poker is now. Like, you try and play the odds as much as you can, analytics, everything else that goes into it. I think they're legitimately looking at it and saying, this is a secret weapon that we can deploy responsibly and cause havoc in the offensive end for the other team, because you can't account, where you don't normally account for a fourth forward on 5-on-5 play.
No, you're right. 100% right. I think it's an innovative way of looking at it. Smart way of looking at it for Sheldon Keefe. And as I said, I think Marner's the type of player who can handle the 2-on-1 against. And also, I think it's a mindset, right? So we hear it a lot. You'll say, oh, you know, the only guy back is the forward and it's a 2-on-1. Like, it's an advantage for the attacking team, right? Because that forward's mindset is to be attacking. That forward's mindset when he goes out on his shift is to be an offensive player, to try to play in the offensive zone. If Marner's going out there as a defenseman, sure, he wants to attack and he wants to do it, but he also has the mindset that he has to be aware of what's going on behind him. He has to have that. And it becomes a mindset change versus when he's out there as a forward, right? So he has the skill set to handle a 2-on-1 against. He's a good player. He can do it, you know, probably has the awareness of where to go and all that. And it becomes a mindset that he's going to be able to understand how to play it and understand that he's the one that has to play it because he's the last guy back, you know? And so I think in that sense, it could work. It's not something that I expect to see all the time. I wouldn't expect, but also it gets him out on the ice a little bit more too, right? I mean, it beefs up his ice time. And if you're in a game, you know, like you were talking about for the Leafs, you're down a goal. I mean, you want to get your best players on the ice as much as you can, especially in the third period. And if this is a way to do it, well, go ahead and do it. You know, what do you got to lose at that point, right? Well, now you go down two goals instead. Like, you know, give yourself an opportunity. So I agree with what you're saying there. Quickly, before we get to the interview with Austin Matthews, and we're going to do more predictions on the other end. Toronto a playoff team, Sean?
Of course.
You say that like that, but what we just talked about, all that they're in deep, and we also had the debate on a previous podcast about their goaltending.
Yeah, they're both legitimate. And then you look at their talent, and you're like, oh my God. Like, they're one of those teams, like Colorado was last year. They're going to outscore other teams. They're going to, at times, embarrass defensively bad teams. So, and not a huge bit of competition. Like, are they one of the five best teams in their division? Yes. Are they not going to be a wild card? I think they're top three, but if they're not, are they not going to be a wild card? Who's going to come up ahead of them? I don't see it. Like, I think this year for them is about being ready for the playoffs and the mindset that they can get out of the first round, that they can play hockey that will allow them to not leave after the first round of the playoffs.
Rinse, repeat. It's the same mindset every season for them. They just got to do it finally, get out of the first round. But anyway, I do think that they're a playoff team as well. We'll talk more predictions on the other side of this interview that we're about to play here with Austin Matthews. We caught up with him at the Player Media Tour in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago. He talked about playing tennis. He talked about his family trip to Montana, scoring 60 goals. Here's that interview with Austin Matthews. All right, Austin. So we heard you played a lot of tennis this offseason, this summer. You've been a golfer as well. You play golf. Are you a better tennis player or a better golfer?
That's actually a good question. I'm not sure because I feel like I put a lot more effort into like getting better at tennis in summer than I would have like any other point in like golf. Like if like I just go play and like, you know, you just get a little bit better while you play. But I feel like tennis, like I'd take like lessons and like I'd watch it all the time. And so I don't know, I think they're probably like pretty equal with like maybe tennis trending in the direction of being a little bit better.
Why tennis? Like what is it about the sport?
I don't know, honestly. Like I feel like I got into it last summer because I couldn't golf for like a little bit when I had wrist surgery, and then I just like really loved it and was playing it a little bit throughout the year, like on off days and stuff. We'd get some guys and go play like doubles and just like mess around, and I really started to like it. I really started like watching it, and then once like the off season rolled around, like that's all like I did for the first part of it was just like play tennis, like take lessons and just try to get better.
Obviously, you're a natural athlete, but what's the hardest part about tennis for you? Like, what can't you master yet?
Well, like, I think, like, at the start, it's just, like, getting your, like, ground strokes and, like, being able to just hit the ball cleanly and have, like, proper technique and stuff. And then I feel like I've kind of got that down, like, where I can, like, really hit the ball pretty solidly. And then now it's just, like, kind of understanding and, like, learning the game and just, like, little, like, niches, I'd say, like... like I played with Alexander Kerfoot. He's like played tennis like for his whole life and stuff. And like, he just like, they understand the game, you know, like they understand like when they need to go to the net, they understand like which shot they need to hit and stuff like that. And like, I'm not at that level yet. It's more so just like getting the ball over and like hitting it cleanly. But, I don't know. I just like become really like infatuated with it. And like, I would watch it all summer. Like, me and my buddies would have like some random like ATP 250 tournament on, like whatever tennis was on like this summer, like we probably watched it, honestly.
Now it's interesting to me because it's not anywhere near what hockey is. You know, I mean, it's such a different sport from hockey. Do you think that you're into it because it's just a cool thing that you like and enjoy doing, or is there a correlation at all to playing tennis in the off season will help you during the season with some type of workout?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is like a bit of a workout. Like, I definitely think could be classified as one. I mean, it's tough. Like, you're running a lot. I think just like the footwork and stuff is useful, whether it's, you know, some sort of correlation in hockey or whatever. But I found just like the footwork and everything was like something that I needed a lot of help with, like in that sport. So I don't know, maybe it helped me in hockey and stuff like that. So I don't know. Is not being good at something? Yeah, because, like, you have something to, like, work towards, right? Like, something to improve at and get better at. Yeah, like, I don't know. It was cool, like, going from, like, last year where, like, we'd go play and, like, just, like, kind of be bunting the ball over the net. And then now, like, we're actually, like, playing and, like, rallying and having, like, these pretty, like, incredible points where, like, we're looking at each other, like, holy cow, like, how'd that just happen? Like, so it's fun. Like, it's... yeah, it's nice to, you know, kind of have something and just, like, work at it and improve at it. Just like hockey, just like anything. I mean, there's so many things that you can kind of look at.
How's your serve? My serve's terrible. I'm not a very good player, but my serve...
the best part of my
really?
Game. Yeah, I think it helps that I'm tall, but, like, yeah, I think the serve is... Yeah, that was a big one for me, too, but, yeah, the serve is actually probably, like, one of the better parts of my game, I think. Backhand needs some work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because I was actually going to ask, one of the questions I was asking you, if you could be a pro athlete in another sport, what would it be? I'm going to guess it would be tennis with the way you've spoken.
I've caught like the tennis bug. Yeah. So I think I would say like tennis now. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe like a year, 2 years ago, I'd say like golf because that was like what I love to do in the off season, you know, previously. But yeah, I'd probably have to go with tennis.
Is there... And it doesn't have to be a tennis player, obviously. But is there an athlete in another sport that you admire that you maybe haven't met yet that you'd love to pick their brain?
Yeah, I mean, we could just keep it on the subject of tennis, I guess. Like, I actually grew up, I really liked Nadal. So I'd always, like, root for him. I just love, like, how he played. And him being from Spain, like, my mom's from Mexico. So, like, some sort of, like, Spanish correlation there, I guess. So, like, I always really liked him, so I think he'd be a cool guy to talk to because I just, I mean, his resume speaks for itself, but just, like, his mentality and the way he approaches things and you listen to him, like, talk at interviews and stuff, he's just very focused, and I think he'd be a pretty interesting guy to kind of pick his brain on things. He's kind of got, like, that almost like Kobe mentality in a sense. But obviously with what he's done in the sport and what he continues to do and just his overall mentality and his attitude towards the game, like I think that'd be a pretty interesting guy to talk to.
What's the coolest thing you did this summer?
I mean, I went to Montana with my family, and that was pretty fun. I've been really wanting to go there ever since I watched Yellowstone. So my whole family watched it. So, you know, we always try to take, like, one, like, family trip a summer where we'll go away and just, you know, have some family time. And the past couple years, it's usually, like, some, like, beach, you know, like some water, and we'll just get away. And this summer, we kind of decided to do something different. So we went up to Montana and like rode horses. We shot some like clay, ski. Yeah, like the clay pigeons or whatever, where they sling them and stuff, and they just like some cool outdoorsy stuff like that. Some hikes, but yeah, it was beautiful up there. Like definitely a big change of pace from like Arizona or Toronto or whatever. It's but yeah, it was beautiful. It was a lot of fun.
And you've been known to be, since you got in the league, a big family guy. Your parents are very involved and close and whatnot. You're in the thick of it when you're in hockey season. You're in the biggest hockey market. You're one of the biggest names in that market. Does it keep you grounded to go on these trips with your family, to do these things? Does it help you just remember kind of what this is, you know,
yeah,
who you are?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you get so entrenched during the season and, like, focused.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like stressful, but like in a good way, but it's very like, you know, very every day's, you know, tough day or you're playing games. Like it's a busy schedule, you're traveling and stuff. So it's like, it's nice to go home and just kind of like not have that, not have a schedule, get to spend time with your family and just like really unwind. Like, I think that's something like, I don't think people maybe realize like how necessary it is to like really unwind from a season. So it's nice. It's nice to spend time and just get away. And like I said before, like I love playing in Toronto. Like it's honestly, it's so amazing and the support and everything we get. But it is nice to go home and kind of not be recognized and just kind of fly under the radar and just kind of have that, you know, that kind of, I guess, lifestyle there where you can just really unwind and not have to, you know, not have to really worry about much and just chill.
That's not worrying about much. Related to that, has 60 goals again popped into your head? Is that something you think about?
I mean, I think it's like something that'll cross your mind, but I don't think it's something that like I'm, you know, like I need to do this. Like, I mean, I just want to win. Like, my main goal is to win, and I know what I'm capable of as like a player, and I know that, you know, for our team to be successful, like I need to play up to my capabilities. And if that comes with like 60 goals, then that's great. And if it doesn't, then it doesn't. But as long as, you know, I'm playing well and doing things that help the team win and our team's having success and, you know, we continue that, then, I mean, I'm happy, so.
And you've, I mean, 60 goals is impressive. You scored a ton of goals the year before that too. Scoring goals in hockey is maybe the hardest thing to do. And you're doing it with regularity. How are you doing it with regularity, I guess? Like, what is it, you know, is there something about the way you see the game? Like, can you describe it to be able to get to the net and do what you do?
I think just being able to score in, like, different ways, too, whether that be, like, around the net or shooting from outside in different spots. Or, I mean, I play with good players, too, so just trying to move off the puck and get open for them so I can get in a spot where I can shoot or vice versa for them. So, I don't know. Like, I just try to let the game, like, come to you and just really try to move well off the puck and try to support my teammates because they're so good at getting me the puck and trying to be able to score in different ways.
Is part of that your release, where your release is coming from? Because when I watch you play, and I'm not as knowledgeable as you, but it kind of reminds me of Patrick Mahomes a little bit in that he has all these release points for his throws, right, to get around the linemen and whatever. He's clearly thought about what he needs to do to be successful. And it seems for goalies and defensemen, it's a lot harder to read you because your shot comes from so many different places.
Yeah, I think that can maybe be, like, just repetition from different shots and different angles. Like, I'm sure it's probably similar with football and him throwing it. Like, just repetition of throwing it at different angles, different routes, and, like, different areas. Like, I think it's like no different than hockey, just working on different shots, different release points. You know, I don't think any shot's always going to be the same. Like, there's always somebody that's trying to check you or trying to stick check you or whatever, and you have to kind of read and react as quick as possible and kind of go with what's thrown at you and make those reads and adjustments. But I think it's also just like getting a lot of repetitions and just being comfortable that kind of whatever is thrown at you or whatever angle or movement you need to do to make, you know, get the puck through or make sure that, you know, you can get around it or get it through sticks, bodies, whatever that may be, and, you know, feeling comfortable, I guess, in those weird positions.
You've tried the Michigan before, right? Or at least thought about doing it.
I've tried it a couple of times. Yeah.
Now, it's obviously something that's come into the league. More and more guys are trying it. Do you wonder what's next? Like, what's the next cool, like, I mean, do we call it a trick shot if we can or whatever? Like, do you wonder what next? Is it something that you've ever practiced? Is the next one something coming off of your stick?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, I love the lacrosse move. Like, I think it's awesome. It's exciting, like, you know, the play where, like, Zegras flipped it to Sonny, mm-hmm. too, where he, like, nobody's obviously ever seen that either, but, I don't know what's next, but, I mean, I think the lacrosse, like, style goals have been pretty popular, and it's, I mean, it's fun to watch, and, like, I'll keep trying to do it, but at the same time, like, I don't care how the puck goes in the net. I just want to see it go in the net, and whether it be a lacrosse move or it goes in off my ass, like, I don't care.
Well, we want to see 5 lacrosse goals this year. That's the over-under. Okay. And but we appreciate you doing this. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your time here, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Great stuff there from Austin. Glad we were able to catch up with him at the Player Media Tour in Las Vegas. And, Sean, as we were talking about on the front end, before the interview with Austin Matthews, I do think Toronto is a playoff team. You definitely think Toronto is a playoff team. I think they're a team that needs to be careful, though. You know, like their expectation is for them to be a playoff team. They can't just assume that they're going to be a playoff team. And I don't think that's a mindset that a lot of NHL players have. But when you've been a playoff team for a while and you're in that window, it's something that, you know, I think everybody in Toronto assumes they're going to be a playoff team. I think the media there assumes they're going to be a playoff team. I think the coaching, well, I think the management staff assumes it as well. It's something that they have to be aware of, but I think they're third. You know, if we're going to look at predictions now, I have them third in that division. I have Florida first, Tampa second. And part of the reasoning there is I still like Florida, even, you know, with the changes. I actually think they could be better. You know, I don't know if the points wise they will be better. I don't know if they're the President's Trophy winner again, but I think they're overall better with the bite and the that they're going to get from Matthew Tkachuk. And also, let's remember Aaron Ekblad's back too. So I think that's a big help for them as well. So I got Florida 1. Tampa knows it doesn't have to win the division. Will, you know, pace itself through the season. Has done that a lot. I got them 2. Toronto 3. And Boston 4. And I have Boston as the second wild card and teetering there. But I got them as the second wild card right now in the East. How do you got the Atlantic shaping out?
Did you cheat? Did you copy my test?
Unfortunately, we think alike sometimes.
There's no controversy here. That's exactly how I have it. Florida, Tampa, Toronto. I think Tampa might be a better team than Florida, but they're going to need a little time to recover from the disappointment of last year, from 3 years of intense hockey. But they're still right there, and they know when the playoffs come how to turn it on, and Florida doesn't, but I think they'll be better in the regular season. Toronto is in that 3 spot because of all the reasons that we've talked about: goaltending, injuries, whatever it might be. I had the Bruins as the second wild card when we did this, and our predictions will appear on NHL.com very soon. They're being edited as we speak. I had the Bruins as the 2. It might be the Islanders now. Just because of what we've talked about earlier. I have the Penguins as the first wild card, and in the Metropolitan, I have Carolina as winning the division, the Rangers pretty close behind them, and the Columbus Blue Jackets in third.
All right, so there you go. There's our difference right there, okay? So, by the way, perfect segue, Sean. Zach Werenski, an interview with him is coming up here shortly, Columbus Blue Jackets defenseman. Really good stuff from him. He talked about Columbus as a destination, how he found out about Johnny Gaudreau, summer skates in Michigan, being a number one defenseman. Lots of good stuff there coming up from Zach Werenski. But you have the Blue Jackets 3rd. I do not have them in the playoffs. 5th, maybe, in the Metro. I have the Rangers winning the division. I have Carolina 2. I think it's going to be tight. I give the Rangers the edge. I like their scoring depth, and they have better goaltending. And that's why I'm giving them the edge. But I think it'll be tight. Either way, it can flip, you know, one way or the other. But I have the Rangers 1, Carolina 2. I have Pittsburgh 3, because regardless of what you say or what anybody says, I'm not picking them to not miss the playoffs again until Sidney Crosby's no longer playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I've done it before. I've been wrong. I'm not doing it again. He's still really good. Malkin's still really good. Letang is as well. Gensel, Rust, they got a lot. They have some holes. There's no question. And with fairness to everybody else, I think Mike Sullivan's the best coach in the National Hockey League. So it gets the most out of his team. So I got them 3. I have the Islanders 4, and I have them as the first wild card. And I guess you could say that would be my bold prediction in the East, because the New York Islanders were not close last year. They were not a good team. I mean, I guess, you know, okay, they were they close? Nobody really thought of them as a playoff team throughout the second half of the season when they started to improve, I guess. They missed the playoffs last year, but they missed it by 16 points. So no, they were not close to a playoff team last year. It took 100 points to get in the playoffs last year in the East. I don't think it takes 100, because I don't think the Islanders or Boston are 100-point teams, and both I have in the playoffs right now. But I think the change of coaching, Lane Lambert's been under Barry Trotz for a long time, and now he gets a little bit of freedom to do what he wants to do rather than always listening to what Barry wants to do. And Barry's one of the best coaches of all time in the National Hockey League. If Lane Lambert can just let the reins off of Matthew Barzal a little bit, let Matthew Barzal go. Matthew Barzal should be, talent-wise, he should be a point-per-game player, minimum. He's that good. He's that talented offensively. He's that creative offensively, that good of a playmaker. And if you can get him to beef up that, he hit 59 points last year. Give him 75 this year, which is still not a point-per-game pace if he plays the whole season. That's 16 more goals the Islanders are getting somewhere, right? They need to score more. Their goaltending is elite. Sorokin, Varlamov, that's among the best pairs you'll find, best tandem you'll find in the league. Their defense is strong. Their forward depth can be pretty good. They need their top-end guys to produce more. And I look at two guys, Anthony Beauvillier and Oliver Wahlstrom. Combined last season, they had 25 goals. If they end up playing the way they can play, combined, they could maybe have 40 goals. It's not a huge stretch for each of those guys to be 20-goal scorers. And now all of a sudden, you're talking about the Islanders with another 20 goals, let's say, if you tack on more for Barzal, and now they're a playoff team, I think. So I got them right there. It might take 96 points to get in the playoffs. If the Islanders can score more, it's 12 more points for them to get into the playoffs, and I think they can do it. So that, I guess, you want to look at it in a way, that's my bold prediction. New York Islanders, first wild card.
Wow, you really went on a limb.
I went on a huge limb there. But here's the thing. The other thing,
you picked
Columbus,
the Eastern Conference finalists from the two previous years before COVID ravaged and 14 game opening road trip team to be the first wild card. Woo, Dan, you live on the wild side.
I do. You know what? I'm not. Again, I already talked to you about Ottawa, Buffalo, and Detroit. I can't fully trust their consistency. And the thing with Columbus, Johnny Gaudreau is a great signing for them. They still don't have a number one center, right? They still don't. They don't have that. Do they have a number one goalie? I don't know if they have a number one goalie. Merzlikins is good, but is he a number one? Is he a true solid? They need elite number one goaltending to make the playoffs. I don't think they get that. Is their defense that strong? I got a lot of questions there too. So I look at Columbus and I'm saying to myself, yeah, it's great. They got Gaudreau and they got Line A, and those guys will be able to produce, but depth wise, goaltending wise, I don't see it. So I can't put that. I just can't put them in there. I wanted to say the Buffalo Sabres were going to be the team, and that would be my bold prediction, but I can't trust their goaltending. If they had a goalie, if they had a guy who I could believe could even be a number one, then maybe I could see Buffalo with their young core coming up, strong finish last season, but not with the goaltending.
Yeah, I couldn't make that leap either, but you're awful brave about the Columbus Blue Jackets now that Zacharynski's not around. I didn't hear any of this when we were talking to.
I'm not going
to
rip on his team in front of him.
Why not? I don't think your team's that good, Zach. Convince me otherwise.
Your team can't be a playoff team. Convince me otherwise.
And I think he will in the interview that we talk about.
He would, yeah.
And maybe I'm buying the Kool-Aid, but I think my prediction's a little bolder than yours.
You think your prediction's bolder than mine? I guess it is, but they had the biggest free agent signing in the offseason, and they were only 3 points behind the Islanders last season. They had the same number of wins, and they had signed the biggest guy in the offseason. I'm not so sure that's as bold as it gets, you know, when you make the best signing in the offseason. And the Islanders did virtually nothing except add, you know, Romanov, right? Who's a solid defenseman, and I like the ad, but they pretty much did absolutely nothing in the offseason, unless Lou Lamoriello is pulling stuff out of his hat now, which, by the way, he might, you know, he might do. But your bold prediction is let's go with the team that signed the best free agent in the offseason and should be better for that and didn't really change any, you know, didn't really lose anything anywhere else. Yeah, real bold.
Yeah, well, you just said they stink everywhere.
But that's my feeling.
It's going to be a stretch for Columbus, but I think they're ready. You know, they haven't seen the playoffs in a few years. And, you know, I think Patrick Laine is going to have a monster year. But I've been wrong about Patrick Laine before. But I think he's just going to be unbelievable. And, you know, we're doing our trophy trackers now. And the call that ran on Monday, the day before we taped this, and Ken Johnson got some love. I mean, if he takes that spot, you know, he's going to benefit from two really good players on his flanks, and maybe he's the answer. I don't know that he is. It's awful hard for a rookie to be a number one, but if anybody is ready for it, it's probably him.
It's a pretty big leap. You know what's interesting, though? Just popped into my head here. Neither one of us have Washington. They've been a perennial playoff team, and both of us are just saying, nope, not the Washington Capitals. They signed the Stanley Cup championship goaltender, right? So they think they solved that area, but neither one of us have Washington in the playoffs. I mean, I know why. Like, for me, a little bit of an aging core, Tom Wilson's injury, Nick Backstrom has been such a glue, you know, for that team for so many years now. And I don't know that he's going to play. He's still dealing with a hip injury. I can't buy into Washington right now, but I guess you can't either. I'm wondering, what are your reasons?
They're very similar. Like, what's going to happen with Ovi without Backstrom? You know, they make commercials about how they're linked together. And we don't know when Nick Backstrom's going to come back, and we don't know how good he's going to be when he comes back. I don't love their defense. I don't love Darcy Kemper as a number one on that team. I just don't think they're the Colorado Avalanche. And there's no disrespect to Darcy at all. But they won, or the Colorado Avalanche didn't win because of Darcy Kemper. They won because of what they have. And I don't know that that Washington has the same thing. So maybe that's our bold prediction. And maybe we share it, that the Washington Capitals, who have been in the playoffs forever, it seems, may not be spring happiness.
Yeah, I don't think Ovechkin can score enough to get him in the playoffs. I think he can score a lot, but I don't think he can score enough to make up for deficiencies in other areas. But watch them go out and be a 100-point team again. By the way, what do you think? Do you think it takes 100 to get into the playoffs in the East again? It did last year.
No, because you're not going to feast on those other teams.
Right.
The bottom is going to come up, and it's going to, you know, it's going to lift all the boats. And push them all closer together, because you're not going to walk into Detroit and Buffalo and Ottawa and be like, let's put the 2 points in our pocket now, we'll give, you know, 3-quarter effort, and we'll save ourselves for that big game in Boston two nights from now. Like, you're going to have to go earn your points against those other teams. So I think the difference between the top and the bottom is going to be condensed, and the points are going to be more spread out. So I don't think it takes 100.
Yeah, and I think New Jersey is going to be a little bit better too. So let's not, you know, let's not discount that. You have Columbus in the playoffs. They were not, they were 19 points out. I got the Islanders in the playoffs. They were 16 points out last season. I really think there's two teams in the East right now, Philadelphia and Montreal, where you're looking at and saying, all right, guys, that should be 2 points for us when you go get it. You're not going to get it all the time, but that should be, those are the two teams I look at and say, yeah, you know, okay, not much of a shot there for them right now in the situations that they're in. But the rest of them have these higher aspirations and theoretically should be better. I mean, look, the Devils, if the Devils if the Devils are 19 points better, 20 points, they're an 82, 83 point team. That's not good enough to get in the playoffs, but that's another 9 or 10 wins.
Yeah. And even those two teams you talked about, like you may get the points, but you're going to suffer the next game. Like,
well, especially against the Flyers.
There's two coaches there, John Tortorella and Marty St. Louis, that demand mm-hmm. that their teams play. The talent doesn't matter. Like, would each team love to have more talent? Yes. But the talent that's there is going to give 100% or they're not going to play. It's that simple. And it's not always that simple in the NHL, but it is that simple. And so there will be an accounting when you play each of those teams. And you will walk into your next game not quite as fresh as you would hope to be.
And those two, of course, are always linked from their time with Tampa Bay. Anyway, let's get to the guy who you think is going to be in the playoffs this year. Zach Werenski from the Columbus Blue Jackets. We talked again to go over it again. We talked to him about Columbus as a destination after Johnny Gaudreau signed there, how he found out about Johnny Gaudreau signing, by the way, just to like a bunch of us, how he found out just like we did. Amazing summer skates in Michigan with so much star power and also being a number one defenseman, much more than that too. Here's the interview with Zach Werenski.
Zach, thanks for joining us. So who knew that your decision to sign long-term and stay would spark Columbus being a destination for, I guess, the guy who was the top free agent as well this season. So this year, what did you think when Johnny Gaudreau signed with the Blue Jackets?
I couldn't really believe it. I think during free agency, you never really know what can happen. There was a lot of talk with Johnny and Kadri and all these guys. And I was kind of reading that Columbus was trying to make a splash and get some players. And we signed Gabranson. And then I saw something that Gaudreau, you know, might be interested in Columbus. So I FaceTimed Eric Robinson, who's best friends with Johnny growing up. And he just kind of smiled and was like, it's not like the rumors are kind of true. Like he's interested and kind of wants to come here. And so after that, I just kept refreshing Twitter like all day. And next thing you know, I saw that he signed. I think Elliot Friedman tweeted it, the first one I saw. And next thing I know, my phone's blowing up. My parents are calling me, my friends, everyone's super excited. So it was just an awesome day to see that. And it's great for the city and the organization.
So you got to live like us.
Yeah, essentially.
Pretty much. Refreshing yeah. Twitter, find out dealing Twitter. In the rumors.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's actually kind of fun doing that because you never know when something's going to pop up. But no, that was a big gift for us, obviously, and just a great day when that happened.
It's big for the team, the room, the team, what you guys are capable of on the ice. But you know Columbus is a market. You've been there long enough to understand it. You've seen guys leave, right? You've seen guys not want to stay or decide not to stay, or maybe the team didn't want them, whatever it might be. To know that he wants to be there. Like, he could have gone anywhere, right? There were a lot of teams that were interested. Do you believe that that sends a message to the rest of the NHL about what this market is capable of?
I mean, I think it should. I think, you know, if you're not from Columbus or play for Columbus or spend extended time there, you're never really going to know what it has to offer. I've been fortunate to spend 6 years there. I'm going on my seventh. I've spoke very highly of it. I think with Johnny, obviously he's seen it, he's heard about it, but he's really going to get a feel for how great the city is this year. And I think when you have a platform as big as he does, you know, we got guys like Laine now signed long-term who speak very highly of it. I think when guys like that start saying great things about the city and the organization, coaches, fans, all that, I think it does send a message to the rest of the league. And, you know, hopefully, it, you know, more guys put Columbus on their list because it really is a great place to play.
You're a defenseman, so you know how difficult he is to play against. What are Blue Jacket fans going to see, and what's maybe the one thing that nobody knows that we're all going to see from him?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely know how good of a player he is. I was checking Instagram the other day, and one of his highlights was on there, and it was him walking me. So I'm happy I don't have to deal with that anymore. But, you know, I played with Johnny a little bit at World Championships. I've known him a little bit off the ice, and I think Blue Jackets fans, you know, they probably expect a lot out of him, and rightfully so. He's been playing at a high level for a long time in this league. He's one of the best players. I don't really know if there's anything that's going to surprise us. I think he's pretty much done it all. And, you know, 115 points last year is incredible. So I don't know if he's going to have 115 again this year. He definitely could. But I just think fans are excited to have a player of that caliber with our organization for 7 years.
Do you think he's ready for the cannon?
I know it scared him when he was on the visiting team. So I think when you're the home team, you kind of, it's just second nature here in that zone. So, I think he'll be fine after a couple preseason games.
So what are your expectations now? You've added in free agency. Your team's a year older. You got a year under the belt with the coach. What are your expectations for the Blue Jackets this year?
Yeah, I mean, we're a playoff team. That's our expectations. That's how our leadership group views it. I think that's how our whole team views it. I think for us right now, it's playoffs, and that's how it should be. Like you said, we have a year under our new coaching staff. We had some change last year. We didn't really have expectations. You know, we were playing some good hockey for, you know, 20 games. Then we played bad hockey for 20 games. We were kind of up and down last year. I think this year it's playing with more consistency. We added some pieces, obviously a really big piece in Johnny. And I think for us now it's just knowing as a group that it's this year is a playoff year for us. And I think we have to make it.
Last year, you also went through a transition that I don't think a lot of people were aware of. You went from being the guy who played with Seth Jones, to being the number one defenseman. How was that transition for you last year? Are you more comfortable in that role now because you've gone through that a year?
Yeah, you know, I think when, you know, you're playing with Seth your whole career, and I loved it, but I think you always tell yourself you're ready for the number one spot and you're ready to be the number one D, and until you actually go through it and see what it's all about and the ups and downs. And it was the first year I was wearing a letter as well. We had new mm-hmm. coaches. So there was a lot going on. I think it was my biggest learning year that I've had so far in the NHL. I think I learned the most I ever have. I went into the summer and the off season knowing what I had to work on. I'm back in Columbus now, training, getting ready for the season in camp. And I just feel way better about my game, about where I'm at mentally, physically. So, yeah, I'm excited for year two in that role, and hopefully I can try and elevate my game and other guys around me and just be a little bit sharper defensively and help this team win.
It's a little inside hockey, but what is the biggest difference from being a number two to being a number one? Like, people would just look at it and be like, oh, you play a couple more minutes, but it's bigger than that, isn't it?
For sure. I feel like for me, too, it's more so the leadership side of it. I think last year we only had two guys over 100 games on the back end. You know, I'm 25. We have Gavrikov, who's a little bit older than me, and then we just signed Gabranson, who's huge, a little bit more veteran presence. But I think for me, it's that leadership aspect of it. You know, obviously playing hockey is one thing, and you have the penalty kill and the power play, and you're playing big minutes against top lines. But you know, last year guys were asking me questions about certain things, and that was the first year that, you know, they weren't asking Seth. You know, mm-hmm. I was always a guy that was kind of just there and helping along the way, but I felt like last year was the first year guys were asking me questions that I've never gone through that before. So that was the biggest difference for me. It was just trying to help other guys and be that guy guys can lean on, you know, kind of be that pillar defensively on the back end.
Wanted to switch it a little bit, still on the ice, but change of pace from away from the team to your training this offseason, because I noticed that you and a bunch of Michigan-based players were skating together, I think, in Plymouth at the USA Hockey Arena, right? I mean, and yourself, Dylan Larkin, Jack Hughes, Quinn Hughes, there was a number of guys. What is it like to have that type of community in the offseason and that group to skate with?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. You know, I'd put our skates up there with anyone's skates. Just the group we have, the skill we have out there. This was the first summer I skated with them for a full summer. In the past, I've hopped out there with them and skated a little bit, but I was there every day with them and seeing how hard they work. And it's kind of like the new wave of the NHL, how skilled these guys are. I'm 25, and I felt old out there. You got guys like Cole Caulfield and Trevor Zegras and Jack Hughes just dancing around, making plays, doing things I've never seen before. And for me as a guy, it kind of, you know, you just get excited to go to the rink every day and see these guys. So, it's pretty unbelievable the crew we have there, and very fortunate to be able to skate with that group.
What's that? You talked about the ice and the skill level. What's that locker room like with all those young superstars, specifically the Tkachuks and the Hughes, who have known each other since they were little kids? Like, I would imagine they must just be a complete crack up.
Yeah, well, the Tkachuks weren't there this summer. So they weren't there. But the Hughes brothers, like Luke Hughes, Jack Hughes, Quinn Hughes, the three of them together, it's pretty hilarious because they're brothers. So, like, on the ice, they'll get in fights over certain things that other guys won't. They'll be chirping each other. So just the locker room dynamics, it's pretty great. Me and Larkin have been best friends for a long time. So you have all these battles going on out there, but they're friendly battles. But I think each player has that competitive edge where when it gets to the battle duels, the one-on-ones, the two-on-twos, the three-on-threes, no one wants to lose. And it gets pretty chippy out there, but it's all in good fun.
You could add a few more to that list. I think Matty Beniers was there as well. That's, if there's a World Cup of hockey, that's Team USA, isn't it?
I hope so. I hope they put a good word part in for it. Me. Yeah, but no, seriously, I mean, it speaks volumes to USA Hockey and how far it's come, and guys going back to that area to train. A lot of guys work out at USA with Brian Galvin, who's the head strength coach there, and a lot of guys put their trust in him. So I think it just shows that USA Hockey is doing it right now, and they're producing, you know, top players at a high level, and you know, guys like coming back and being in that environment. So it's good for USA Hockey.
So you were there to see guys like Jack Hughes and Trevor Zegras and, you know, Cole Caulfield trying things, right? I mean, they're on the ice. They're doing, and we've seen it now in games. So what did you see? What's next? What's coming next from those guys that you might have seen them working on? Give us a little little hint.
Well, I was asking Trevor Zegras, and this was the first summer I've met him, so I was just picking his brain a little bit, and obviously he's done the Michigan, and he did the pass to Sonny Milano last year in Buffalo. Things that the NHL really hasn't seen consistently before. And he was showing me this one move, kind of like the Michigan, but just like 10 times crazier. And it was funny because as he showed me it, the first time he tried it, like, he did it to perfection. And I was like, you can actually pull this off, which is scary to think about. It's it's pretty much like a Michigan, but it's more so like driving the net, like pick it up on a stick. And I can't even explain it. Like, I can't do justice. Maybe he can, but just thinking of it and seeing him do it for just trying it and executing it perfectly, it just made me think, like, this is a real possibility, you pulling this off in a game. And then you have Jack Hughes doing stuff, and Cole Caulfield scores on every single shot. It's impressive to watch these guys.
Does it give you nightmares as a defenseman?
Yeah, it's going to ask the same question.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, a little bit. Yeah, like there'd be days on the ice where Mr. Hughes, who runs the skates, would be like, all right, we're doing one-on-ones. And I'm like, really? Like, can't we just, like, shoot pucks today? But, no, it's you know, you get better playing against these guys in the summer. And like I said, I feel really good going into camp this year just based on skating with these guys. They're the best players in the world, the most creative guys in the world, and seeing them every day, it just helps your game.
And I think I know your answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway, because you came up, you're sort of like bridged this gap of, like, you know, a little bit of an old school mentality in the NHL, and then these guys coming in and doing all this kind of stuff. I would imagine you lean on, you know, when, as long as it's not done against you, you know, you're leaning like, let's see more of this, right? So what's the reaction around the league? Like, do you get the sense that guys are buying into more of the fun trick shot skill stuff?
I mean, it depends. Like, I think there's, I don't really know how to say it, I guess. I feel like, you know, we have, like, when I joined the league and you have guys like Hartnell and Dubinsky and, you know, Foligno, like, older guys that have been around for one style, and there's still certain guys like that in the league. And like you said, I'm right in the middle, right? So I see both sides of it. I see the young skill, and I see the, you know, the way the game used to be played also. But I just don't think there's any stopping it at this point. I think these guys are so skilled and so talented that, and they play with such confidence too, that there's, if they want to do something, they're going to go out there and do it. So, for me, I guess I'm kind of lucky that I'm right in the middle, so I see both sides of it, but that's just the way the league's headed, and these guys are taking it there, and I'm happy I get to watch it front row, I guess.
Speaking of watching it front row, who, for you, is the most entertaining player in the NHL? Not necessarily the best. I think we all know who that player is, but who entertains you the most? You're like, I need to see what this guy's doing.
Like, if I get home and want to turn on a hockey game, like, this is a must-see player?
Yeah.
I really like watching Austin Matthews. Obviously, Connor McDavid, like, anytime he gets the puck, he can go end-to-end and do something crazy. I just feel like whenever Austin's on the ice, he has a chance to score. And that's something that's very rare. You know, he scored 60 last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he score even more at some point in his career. I think just watching a guy like that, and when the Leafs get on the power play, just knowing that anytime the puck leaves the stick, it could end up in the net, I think that's must-see TV for me, and I always like watching those games.
Good stuff, man. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, all right?
Yeah, thank you.
Good stuff there from Zach Werenski. All right, Sean, let's flip it. We've done a lot on the East. We had two Eastern guys as guests. Before we close out the episode, let's talk West. You got the Colorado Avalanche, Stanley Cup champions. They're still, to me, the best team in the Central Division and probably the best team in the Western Conference. St. Louis is going to nip at their heels, in my opinion. It might be the last run for the Blues. We don't know about Ryan O'Reilly. We don't know about Vladimir Tarasenko, both guys in the last year of their deal. We'll see. Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou have come up to kind of bridge the gap there, you know, within that core in age. So I like them. I like Peter DeBoer as the coach of the Dallas Stars. He always gets a lot out of his teams early. Look at the New Jersey Devils. Look at the San Jose Sharks. They went to the Stanley Cup final, I believe, both of them in the first year under Peter DeBoer, right? So if it's not the first year or second year, I got to double check. But regardless, he gets a lot out of those teams. Dallas is going to get more out of Miro Heiskanen. 36 points is the most that Miro Heiskanen has ever scored in his career in an NHL season. That guy should be, he could be 60 points this season. They're going to, just the style of play, it's going to be far less conservative, which it was in Dallas. It's now going to be pushed more. So I like them. And we talked about Nashville too earlier with Roman Josi at the top of the episode here. And I like the Nashville Predators. And my bold prediction, if you look at it 1 through 4, I've got Colorado, St. Louis, Dallas, and Nashville. I don't have Minnesota. Minnesota was a 113-point team. I don't think they're a playoff team this year.
Well, I do. I think Kaprizov is going to be an MVP candidate. And that's why they're going to be a playoff team. He's a guy that can just carry them. You know, I think their goaltending is certainly serviceable. They're deeper at forward. Losing Fiala hurts. But
big loss.
They have Boldy, you know, with some experience behind him, including the playoffs. They're going to add Marco Rossi, who we've been waiting for years. I think I have him as the wild card, the one. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to take a little step back, but they're not going to take a big enough step back. I think St. Louis wins that division. I think Colorado is going to suffer a little bit this year. Don't love their goaltending. Don't love the Stanley Cup quote unquote hangover. They're still supremely talented and no question that they make the playoffs, but I think St. Louis has a chip on their shoulder. I think St. Louis thinks that series would have went really long and could have teetered in the other direction if they had Jordan Binnington. So I think they play to win that division. And I have Nashville 3. And like I said, Minnesota is the 4 there and the first wild card. And then, you know, the other one that maybe is a little surprising and maybe I have to back off a little bit because of injuries and the way that they've looked in the preseason, but this was done before that. I have Vancouver 3 in the West. You know, I just think they're a better team than they were. I think Thatcher Demko is going to really start to become an elite goaltender this year. He has that mindset and he's entering that window to be that kind of goaltender. But look, the injury to Besser hurts. They haven't put it together so far this preseason. And I know preseason doesn't matter, but things are looking a little bleak for the Canucks to start the season. And if that bleeds into the regular season, it could be problematic. And that leaves me with the Kings as the number 2 wild card, which if it happens, Dan, with Super 16 coming out this week, our preview Super 16, I think I had the Kings 13th out of 16. And of course, because you hate me, you made me write why they would win the Stanley Cup. So I did, and I actually believed what I wrote, and it'll be an 8 winning another cup, and the Kings have already done it, and I forgot to put that in my Super 16. But, you know, they're better. Their goaltending is good. They got a good tandem. Drew Doughty's going to be back. Fiala certainly helps them. I think Deneau, who we talked to at Player Media Tour, you know, and talked about how comfortable he is in L.A., had a career year goals-wise, I think he's going to be even better. And like Minnesota, they have some young kids that are finally kind of fitting into what they want to do. So they certainly, I don't think they're good enough to challenge for the three in the Pacific. Maybe there are with Vancouver, they could go back and forth. But I think by the end of the year, they could put the pieces together to be representative. I mean, they pushed Edmonton to seven games in the first round and really challenged them and made them work harder than I'm sure Edmonton thought they were going to have to work.
Wait, so go over it again one more time. Your Pacific 1-4.
Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, Kings.
All right, so you almost cheated off of my test. You almost did. Very close.
I did it first, Dave.
You've changed the Battle of Alberta for me on that one. But I have Edmonton first in that division, Calgary second. And again, I think it's kind of like the Metro with the Rangers and Carolina, and maybe even a sense of the other two as well, because I can definitely see a scenario where the St. Louis Blues win that division. And you mentioned it, goaltending for Colorado and a cup hangover. Those are two things that are question marks for them. So I could see a situation there. And, you know, same thing with the Atlantic, I guess you could see a situation where Tampa wins, you know, finishes first over Florida. Although I just don't think, I think Tampa knows how to pace itself a little bit more and doesn't really necessarily care if they win the division or not, you know, finish first in the division. But I got Edmonton 1, Calgary 2. I do have Vancouver 3 and LA 4. For similar reasons, goaltending in Vancouver, guys coming up, coaching, Bruce Boudreau gets a lot of out of those guys too. Yes, I'm a little worried about injuries at the start of the season, no question about it, but I still like that team. I like the way they can push. Like I said, I like the coaching, and I specifically like the goaltending. And the Kings, to me, have a lot of young guys coming up that I still expect to be somewhat inconsistent. Their big guys are still really good. Doughty being back helps. Fiala is an important player, but I think there's going to be a little bit of a level of inconsistency there from the Kings. That's why I'm dropping them just slightly into that wild card position. I have them as wild card 1. To go back to the Central, so I got Colorado, St. Louis, Dallas, and Nashville. I didn't have Minnesota. I'll talk about Minnesota first. Losing Fiala hurts. I like Boldy. I like Rossi. They're young. They're inconsistent. They're what Fiala was a couple of years ago. And I can't trust it right there. Their goaltending, Fleury, solid, not as good as it was. Okay. Not nearly as good as it was. So I think that, you know, plays a role as well. Kaprizov, it's a lot on his shoulders to be able to handle this. It's not that much of a stretch for a team like Dallas or a team like Nashville. And let me add the caveat. Jason Robertson's got to be there for the Dallas Stars, okay? And he's not there yet. I still think he will be. If he is traded or if he does not play for a month or whatever, that might change the scenario here. But for right now, I think they get it done. I think they get it done. There's deadlines drive this league, and I think they get it done with Jason Robertson. And they might get it done before you even listen to this episode. You might be done, you know, the contract we're talking about there as well. So I do like the Dallas Stars under Pete DeBoer for reasons I said. And it's not that much of a stretch, Sean, for me to say that Dallas and Nashville will be better teams than Minnesota. And it's not that much of a stretch to say Vancouver can jump up and be a playoff team instead of Minnesota. Maybe that's a little bit more stretch based on what we saw last year. But you asked for bold predictions. I'm giving you the bold prediction that the Minnesota Wild are not going to be a playoff team. And I wonder, Billy Guerin, who's been a terrific guest for us on this podcast, and Dean Evason's been a guest for us as well, are they going to come back if they hear that?
No, that's why we gotta keep this under wraps.
Well, let's not keep it under wraps. That's not the idea here.
Well, why don't you write the story that's going to promote this and just say Minnesota Wild won't make the playoffs?
Hey, all they got to do when we run our predictions on NHL.com is scroll down to my name. Should be right after yours, and see that I do not have them in there. I want to see scroll down.
It'll be up on the bulletin board.
There it is. Good. I'm bulletin board material.
I'm never going to go against Matt Zuccarello. I've been his guy since the Vancouver Olympics.
Yeah.
When I was the Norway beat writer and helped him get a job with the New York Rangers. I didn't really help him get a job with the New York Rangers. I asked him why he didn't have an NHL job, and he told me that I should go tell the NHL as an NHL.com employee that he should be in the league. And then next year, where was he? In the league. So I'm taking credit for it, even though I didn't do anything. I didn't talk to, never talked to Glenn Sather about it.
Lastly, before we do leave, and
these wait. We can't do predictions and just leave it.
No, that's where I was getting to. That's where I was going. Okay. Give me a chance before we get out of here. And these things change because we to me, when you're picking the Stanley Cup champ, who's going to represent who, and you're picking the Conn Smythe Trophy winner, which we do, it just carries so much more weight when you know who's going to be in the playoffs, right? But we've predicted. So let's do the East, the West, and the Stanley Cup champion. I'll give you mine. I get the Carolina Hurricanes in the East. I got the Edmonton Oilers in the West. I got the Edmonton Oilers winning the Stanley Cup. And bold prediction here. Huge. You ready for this one? Connor McDavid's going to win the Conn Smythe.
You are an absolute wild man.
I'm way out on a limb. But I think it's actually a little bit out on a limb with Edmonton because we've never seen them push through that way. But I kind of just look at Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and something clicked last year for them in the playoffs. The Oilers, you know, as a team, something clicked for them that they were able to get over one hump. Now, they couldn't get over that second one. I mean, Colorado was just way better than them, and they swept them. I get that. Jack Campbell is a better goaltender than they had last season. Is Jack Campbell a Vezina-quality goaltender? I don't think so. But I think the Edmonton Oilers can be a team with the talent that they have up front that doesn't need a Vezina quality goaltender that will be able to score its way out of some issues. And that is a big reason why I have them as the Stanley Cup champions. And I'm going way out on a limb with Connor McDavid as the Conn Smythe.
You know, I usually avoid going out with you when we're on the road, or I try to.
You always try to make plans, and then I just kind of lump myself into them.
You tag along. But now that I know how wild you are, see, you've been hiding this. Like, you might actually be more wild than I.
It's true.
So from now on, man, I'm going to let you dictate what happens.
There you go.
You're nuts.
You hang with me, crazy stuff's going to happen.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you got? Like, East-West champs.
You're like Rodney Dangerfield.
All right. East-West.
Actually, Steve Martin.
Let's go.
You're a wild, crazy guy.
All right. Let's go. Give me your predictions.
I have the Carolina Hurricanes winning in the East. I have the Colorado Avalanche getting back to the final in the West. And then I have Carolina winning the cup. And I have Sebastian Aho as the MVP, which is a little bolder than your prediction, at least in the MVP.
Wow. And he's the best forward on the team.
Yeah.
If they're going to go win the cup, you gave it to the best. You're saying the best forward on the team that is going to win the Stanley Cup is going to go win the Conn Smythe. I mean, it's not exactly bold when you're going with Carolina and Aho.
It's bolder than Connor McDavid. And I'm going to make one more prediction that's bold before we get out of here, and it has nothing to do with the playoffs. Kyle Connor is going to win the goal-scoring title this year.
That is pretty bold, but he's a great goal scorer. He is a terrific goal. He is a great goal scorer. I don't see that. I think it's going to be Austin Matthews again.
Okay. Well, that's not bold. So that's not bold. I ended on a bold note. No. You ended on a conservative note.
It's not bold. I think Ilya Sorokin is going to win the Vezina Trophy.
You're the only one.
Yeah. Bold. There it is.
Bold.
I hope you enjoyed this bold episode of At the Rink. And we'll be back next week. And we're going to have some regular season games by the time you hear from us again. So until then, enjoy the hockey.